Agriculture, Industry and Planning Committee to order for
state today,
October 6th. When you're retired, you lose track.
Yeah.
Okay, so I need a motion for approval for minutes from September 1st and September 27th.
So moved.
21, please. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Little housekeeping here because we went a little long on health and education. I'm going to alter the agenda so that Jamie Johnson from Steuben County IDA can be up first and we'll get an update from Jamie.
Thank you, everybody, and thank you for accommodating my schedule. I have to be in Wayland to meet with Compton and then Gunlock at 11 o'clock. So I appreciate you taking the opportunity to change things up for me. It's been a while since I've been in front of the committee. I know I came in front of the special meeting a week or so ago, requesting funding for the turning lane for the industrial park in Bath, but haven't had an opportunity to really give you an update in a while. So I appreciate it. Regarding the turning lane and the infrastructure for the transportation, just to give you a quick update on that, we did have a project team meeting on Friday. And we hope to have final design work done in the next couple of weeks. There's a couple of questions regarding utility layouts and things like that. But if all goes well, things will be ready to bid out on that infrastructure by the spring, which is in line with what we've discussed with DOT. That won't hold up any additional development that could occur in that park. So we're pleased to be able to keep things progressing as far as the need for that infrastructure out there to serve the industrial park area on Route 54. Just a couple of other things. And Scott, thanks for reminding me the other night when you sent me the text that we hadn't talked about renewable energy in a while. And we're very pleased to say that we finally closed on our first wind farm project. Barren Wind is now underway. They're doing clearing as we speak, and we'll be starting turbine construction in the spring as soon as the weather breaks. They have to do clearing over the winter months because they have to do it while the leaves are off the trees. There's a component of it that they can only do while the leaves are off the trees. So that is underway now, and they'll be working through that process all winter long. Just to give you a little bit of an idea on the impacts of a project like Barren Wind, this is a $297 million project, and that's just phase one. So that accommodates turbines in Dansville, in Wayland, and in Cohocton. There's still a phase two component, which is Fremont, but they move forward with the first phase of this. That project alone is going to generate 121.6 megawatts of power, which based on the calculations will serve about 650 homes in the state. The real benefit to the community, though, is the pilot revenue that these will generate. And our calculations have it generating over the course of the 20 years of the pilot, $15.6 million to the taxing entities, which are the communities, the school districts, and the county. The county is going to receive $3.9 million of that over the period of time. So they aren't insignificant numbers that we're looking at. So we're very happy after, seems like I think I calculated 5 years we've been working on the Barren Wind project, that we're finally getting that one underway. Right behind that, 8 Point Wind, which has got a similar timeline, it should be closing before the end of the year because they want to start their clearing in December. So we're working very closely on 8 Point Wind. 8 Point Wind is basically Greenwood and West Union, two communities that were hit very hard by the flooding that can definitely utilize the revenue that will be generated from these turbines. A very similar size project as the Barren Wind project, generating about 113 megawatts, so just a little bit smaller, but it's going to mean $14.5 million worth of revenue for the taxing entities over the lifespan of the pilot. And again, another $2.9 million in revenue to the county. So suddenly we're up to almost $7 million of pilot revenue just for the county itself, and nearly $30 million in new revenue to the taxing entities in total. The unique thing about 8 Point Wind, though, and Canisteo Wind is going to have a similar situation, is they've had to construct, or they will be constructing, a transmission line, a 14-mile transmission line to get to the Hornell substation, which when we negotiated the pilot, we actually pulled out the transmission line and we're going to have a separate tax schedule for that transmission line, because there's not going to be any turbines in much of the area where the transmission line is going to run through. So they wouldn't receive any benefit from the generation. So we've got a separate schedule for the generation. So on that schedule, on 8 Point Wind, which will include Greenwood, Hartsville, and Hornellsville, that's another $11.1 million in pilot revenue for all of the taxing entities and $2.5 million for the county. So again, you start adding these numbers up, and there's some a substantial revenue base that's going to be generated from these wind projects. Right behind those two, we're working on Canisteo Wind, which is a very significant project. It's about the size of both of the first two put together. And then we are also in the process of talking about pilot structures for another project, which is Prattsburg Project, which has a couple of turbines in Prattsburg, but then covers communities like Avoca and some other areas. So, you know, all told, we'll have right now on the docket four wind projects, in addition to the solar projects, which we estimate we've got about $2 billion worth of new investment coming to the community over the next 2 years, assuming all of these projects move forward. One of the big challenges that we have with renewable energy, though, is the infrastructure that we have in place right now. The wind projects are large enough that they can assume the need to invest in things like 14-mile transmission lines. But on the solar side, these small community solar projects, which seem to have been cropping up, can't withstand that kind of investment. A 5-megawatt project, which is about a $5 million investment, $5 to $8 million investment, you can't afford to build a new transmission line. And when you work with NYSEG, these projects actually have to pay an interconnection cost, which in NYSEG terms basically means that they have to pay to upgrade the infrastructure. And we are suddenly seeing many of our solar projects come to a screeching halt in these communities. We just had one yesterday in Pulteney, which likely won't move forward because the original estimate that they received from NYSEG was about $400,000 in interconnection cost. And about a week later, that number went up to $900,000, and the project just said we can't accommodate that. They actually asked us to reduce our pilot schedule. And while I haven't taken it back to the board yet, my recommendation to the community is that, or to the board and to this body, is that, you know, we need to take a harder look before we start allowing these projects to move forward on the back of the taxpayers. We need to take a harder look on what we can do with the state and with NYSEG to get our infrastructure upgraded. I was at a state conference last week, and I was talking to some representatives from New York Power Authority, NYSERDA, and the Public Service Commission, and they were talking about all the great things that are going on with renewable energy statewide. And my response was, that's great, but if we can't upgrade our antiquated infrastructure, then you know, we're not going to be able to hit the benchmarks that the state and federal government have set for renewable energy and take advantage of these opportunities in our community. So there's going to be a lot more to come on that, but that right now is the one area of focus that is going to stifle additional renewable growth in Steuben County as we move forward. Just a couple of other updates. We talked about the turning lane. Golden Age Cheese, they were devastated in the flooding that occurred back in August. They had 54 inches of water flowing through their facility. They thought that they were going to be able to clean it and turn it back on. And when they started turning pumps back on, they started burning up. So they are at less than a third capacity right now. And fortunately, we had secured a fairly significant grant for them back in 2017. And for a number of reasons, including family health issues and things, that project just did not move forward. So we're working with the state right now to reallocate as much of those funds as we can to get them in the hands of Golden Age Cheese so they can get up and operating back in Woodhull again. So that's been a big effort on our part to get the state to do this. A little bit of a challenge with the state right now. I mean, we don't have a commissioner of Empire State Development. That one hasn't been appointed. some of the decisions are coming very slowly, but we will continue to push them to get these funds to Golden Age Cheese as soon as possible. There's precedent to do it, so there's no reason why the state shouldn't approve it. It's just getting through that process. Couple of other infrastructure projects. We talked about the Turning Lane project, the Hammondsport Sewer project, which I keep talking about, will go out to bid in the spring. It will get constructed next year, assuming that commodity pricing doesn't do anything even more haywire than it already has been doing. But that's going to be a huge project for the downtown area in Hammondsport to be able to allow for some additional development and really help those businesses that many of them are under consent orders from DEC to be able to grow their businesses even further. Another project in the Hammondsport area, which we've been talking about for a long time, is the Urbana Pier project. We got them over $400,000 or helped get them over $400,000 back in 2015, I think, to redo the pier and to make some improvements to the Champlain Beach area. They have gone out to bid for the pier. They've awarded that bid and they expect to start construction on the pier in December. So they want to do it while the water levels, they're hoping water levels are low, but if the rain doesn't stop, I don't know if that's going to help them or not, but that project will also get underway. Another effort we're working on, and we've been working closely with Jack and Matt Sousa, planning department on, is 4 years ago, we took some repaid dollars from CDBG that we had, some old CDBG dollars, and we awarded that to Corel Brands at the time, now Instant Brands, to help with their Factory of the Future project. Again, there's been some transitions. They've made the investments that they had indicated they would, but they have not hit their job benchmarks, and they don't expect that they're going to hit their job benchmarks. At the time, they were up to about 515. Now they're in the 480 range, and they expect that's where they're going to be, at least for the near future, as they rebuild tanks and do some other things at the facility. So we've negotiated a settlement with them to recapture a portion of that original grant. They have agreed to return a prorated portion of that money to the IDA. And then we're going to then take that and reallocate those funds into manufacturing videos to be used as part of Manufacturing Day and in the schools, targeting eighth graders. So right now we're putting together an RFP to go out and work with a video production company to actually put together professional videos to demonstrate the impacts and the opportunities in manufacturing that exist. And again, it's going to be rolled out as part of a virtual Manufacturing Day, not this year, but for future years. A couple of other small things to touch on, and then I'd be happy to answer any questions. If you drive past Wilkins RV, you'll see a lot of dirt that has been moved. They are in the process of doing a $3.5 million expansion. Really interesting project, because initially when Brian Wilkins came to us, I was like, well, it's an RV dealership. You know, we've got to really take a look at how we can justify this. They're expanding their service center. Again, $3.5 million expansion, 8 additional bays. They're going to be adding a new service, which would be a paint booth service. And what was even further interesting is when we asked them to really look at their sales, nearly 50% of their sales come from outside of our economic development region and outside the state. So it's new revenue that's coming into the county as these individuals travel here to buy their RV. So again, a nice project for that community and in our region. The next round of consolidated funding applications for the Empire State Development money was opened on October 2nd. This is a new process whereby Empire State Development funding is going to be allocated in a rolling cycle. Every 60 days, there's a new application period open. So we're trying to promote that and gain interest. I will say that without leadership at Empire State Development, this will be the third round of funding, and no projects have been awarded yet. So this new process to get money out the door is not getting money out the door like they anticipated. But again, we hope that as Governor Hochul makes her appointments and there's new leadership at Empire State Development, that will sort of unlock things. And then a final project just wanted to mention We've been working very closely with Providence Housing, or not Providence, I'm sorry, on the Dana Lyons School, on the project there. And they fully expect to make a final application for funding for the next round, which is going to be open sometime between now and January, according to an announcement that was received last week. So they are working diligently to put together the final application for funding for that project and expect to submit it no later than January, which will begin what is estimated to be an $18 million renovation of that project. So happy to answer any questions. That is a good question, Mike. I think it came in, the last number I saw was just over $1 million for the pier. So one of the things that the town is doing is trying to figure out where they're going to, how they're going to allocate funds and whether they're going to bond for it or they're going to redirect some of the ARPA funding that they received. But that's a decision that they've yet to make.
Hilda?
So on the same vein, we had done that big plan several years ago for Urbana and the park and all that, and the pier was designed. Is that the same design that is going to be used?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, we finally got some money's, our money's worth on something, right?
Finally. It's taken a while, but we're getting there. Yes. John.
Well, I guess going back to the wind generation programs, is there data available as to the how much can electricity is consumed in Steuben County? And at this point with the new project coming on, how much are we generating in electricity?
I haven't seen data on total capacity in the county or total usage in the county. You know, what we see, and this is always a big argument, and we understand this, is that, you know, the power goes into the grid. Mm-hmm. You know, it just simply, it isn't allocated here. It actually just simply goes into the larger grid and is utilized as a way of, you know, adding additional capacity into the system itself. I can ask to see if I can do some research and then get back to you on that. I haven't seen any data on what our total usage is. It will be significant because of our manufacturing base. World Kitchen alone.
I'm just trying to see how close we are to going all green.
We're way off. I mean, you know, you look at World Kitchen alone. World Kitchen uses more power than the entire city of Corning. They're NYSEG's largest manufacturing customer. So, you know, these wind projects wouldn't even touch the demand that's coming through a manufacturer like World
Kitchen. How are we going to meet the goals that the state has set?
It's a good question. It's a good question, Wall. Yeah. Yes.
But most of the utilities around here, including the one that has lights on here, they don't have much of an interest in buying this wind power and solar power. You can buy hydro for 2 cents, yeah, and you're going to pay 5 to 7 cents for this stuff. So who wants to even buy it?
And you're right, Bob. Well, it's the benefit to the community isn't the generation, the benefit to the community. And I say this all the time, is the revenue that we're going to generate through the pilots for these communities, because the level of investment that is going to occur in many of these very, very rural communities, they would never see that kind of investment just through a natural growth. You look at a Greenwood or a West Union, and that project, the 8-point project alone, is going to be about $300 million. They would never see $300 million in investment over the course of a 20-year period.
But to expand on Bob's point, my other problem has always been the subsidies that these companies are receiving from the state and federal government. Mm-hmm. So it's not just the 5 cents.
Yeah.
You know, we subsidize this probably to a point of another 5 cents sitting out there.
Yeah,
I guess that's what bothers me more than anything else.
So we did. So
nobody talks about
it. And I can't. I'm not going to justify the state and federal benefits, but we did an analysis on we've done it on the past three projects when we've done our cost benefit analysis. And over the course of a 20-year period, when we look at what the projects would generate from a property tax standpoint and what our pilot revenue is, on Barron, it's less than $1 million difference over the course of a 20-year period. So there isn't a huge incentive that is being provided through the pilot. What they're receiving through the pilot is an assurance that the payment will be structured so that when they go out and finance these projects, they can show their financing partners that the property taxes are going to be stable over the period of time. So we've done the analysis locally, and total benefits from us versus what they would pay there's right around $1 million of benefit provided on a $300 million project over the course of a 20-year period.
I think the point is townships that are very rural, like the Greenwoods of the county, this is the only kind of investment that would ever occur.
Well, I agree.
In there.
Yeah.
But it still bothers me.
The only other way they would ever see their tax base grow is if, you know, the state had screwed up fracking. Mm-hmm. Because when back years ago, when they were doing the Tretton Black gas wells, mm-hmm. Caton saw a huge increase in their tax base just because of the assessed value on the wells. That's never going to happen here because of our sure. wonderful governors.
And the other thing that we didn't talk about on the employment side, while the wind projects usually only generate long-term employment of about 6 to 12 on each project, the construction jobs are substantial. Each one of these projects is going to take about 300 construction jobs over a 2-year period. Now, where we're going to find those individuals to to do those jobs, is still questionable. But you know, they're going to need 300 people to work on each one of these over the course of the next 2 to 3 years.
Well, I think that the ultimate question goes back to the grid mm-hmm. and the will of the state. They've set up some very ambitious renewable energy goals
yep.
between now and 2027. And I don't hear much from the state about the commitment to being able to upgrade and expand those grid capacity.
So that I raised that question last week because they did a power grid study that was released in January, and they looked at the entire state, and then they prioritized investments statewide. And so there was a tier one, a tier two, and a tier three investment. The Hornell substation was a tier one investment that they, said needed to be made in order to allow for additional renewable growth in the state of New York. So it was prioritized way up there. And after that grid study was released, we actually had a conference call with NYSEG, and there was probably 7 or 8 NYSEG representatives on this call from all different offices. And we asked them how they were planning on prioritizing this investment and what we could do to help support that. And they thanked us for our interest and said that their expectation is that they probably would be able to put a shovel in the ground by 2027 to upgrade that station. And, we put our pencils down and just said, well, we're going to miss opportunities. That's the reality, is that there will be missed opportunities if you can't find a way to expedite this investment.
Yeah, John.
Yeah, just one other thing. You have a meeting with Gunlocks. Mm-hmm. Can you give me an update as to what is happening there?
I can give you an update after I meet with them. The last conversation I had with them, there was an email exchange. There is a new plant manager there. I did meet with him in the spring when he first moved here. The last update that he and I exchanged, it was probably about a month ago when we did that exchange, is he said that, since the worst of the pandemic, if you will, when things were shut down completely, they've had a very strong uptick in sales, and they were seeing a very good summer, and they expected that to continue. I'm hoping that I hear a very similar story today. but I will definitely keep you posted because that's why I'm going out.
Is the railcar seat manufacturing?
That's Compen. So I'm meeting with Compen at 11 and I'm going to see Gunlock upstairs right after that meeting. So
Better hurry.
If there are no other questions, we're going to let Jamie go so he can make his meeting. Okay.
All right. Thank you all. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Back to the agenda items. Matt Sosa, are you online?
Yep. Can you hear me?
Barely.
Is that better?
I guess you need to yell.
All right. I'm going to yell. Sorry. I have an infant in my arms. So, all right. So my first agenda item is authorizing the public hearing for Steuben County Well and Septic Program. This is the final public hearing that's required for grant closeout that's scheduled at the end of this month.
I'll move it.
Second.
Any questions for Matt on that? I think we're pretty familiar with the program.
Yeah.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Next item, Matt.
All right, excellent. Continuing that theme, I'd also like to authorize a subrecipient agreement with Arbor Housing and Development. This is for grant administration services for the second iteration of the well and septic grant for 2020. We're in the process of getting this off the ground in the next month or so.
Motion.
Have second?
Second.
Okay. Any questions? The same. We're pretty familiar. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
All right. And last but not least is declaring CDBG project type 2 action. This is the Woodlands Infrastructure Project.
I'll move it.
Second?
Second.
I'll second.
And we're all familiar with Woodlands.
Yeah.
Okay. No questions? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you, Matt.
All right. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks for hanging in there, Matt.
Oh, no worries.
Okay. Next up, Jack has two proposals on ARPA funding.
Yes. So as discussed and sent to you prior, this committee has, or agencies that report to this committee have submitted two active. We have one more that we'll discuss as an informational, but two active ARPA requests to bring to you. The first is Cornell Cooperative Extension has requested $6,700 for the purchase of a large format printer of which they are in need.
Do you want to take these items separately?
Please.
Okay. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Are there any questions? I think we're all pretty
familiar. Tess is here if there is.
Yeah, Tess is here in case you have any questions. It's pretty cut and dry. If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Thank you. The second is from the Soil and Water Conservation District. As you recall, there's been a lot of discussions that Jeff Parker has had with you folks. The immediate request is $320,000 for 18 projects between now and 2023. If you recall, Jeff spent a lot of time at this committee talking 2 months ago, maybe, about the fact that the federal grant funding is pretty much one cycle, has been kicked down the road based upon what happened during the shutdown and federal spending. So that he also talked about few other funding needs in terms of excavators and shop renovations and those things, but the primary request is for $320,000 that will be allocated to projects.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Okay. Is this going to be restricted or unrestricted?
This would be unrestricted.
Okay.
And so would the Cornell.
Any discussion or comment?
Jack, regarding the FEMA application for the Wood Hall area, is any of the money from that available to Soil and Water, or are they basically the agent that spends the money for the municipalities?
Undetermined yet. There is some mitigation should, and hopefully the president signs that soon, we've been pushing.
Be nice.
But we have, you made me lose track, Scott.
I didn't hear that. I didn't hear that, Jack.
Yeah, in discussions with Tim, there are some mitigation and, you know, preventing future similar emergencies. There is some latitude, but a lot of it is that nitty gritty. Once FEMA gets on the ground, okay, what are we doing here? Here are the roads and bridges that were damaged, and then take a look upstream or there and say, how can we prevent this? And based on, we've talked to a couple consultants that do this thing. Once you have an emergency, they come in and they help you. I don't know if we necessarily need that. The school, I think, probably will, because there's a lot to navigate, but they said there's a lot of back and forth during that process with FEMA about what is putting things back into place, or how much do you have flexibility do you have? So it's a long way to say there should be some, but we have zero idea how much.
I support the funding from ARPA for Soil and Water. I think they do an amazing job with the money that they get, and they, whenever there are funds available through grants, they more than match what they get with grant money, right, and they help out the local communities. So it's a good agency.
Not just the municipalities, but property owners who couldn't get any help otherwise.
Yep.
So it's just money put to good use. Yeah. Hilda.
And I would assume Jeff is pretty good about it. If he doesn't need it all, he'll let us know.
Oh,
if some reason FEMA helps out and he doesn't need it all.
He will always find a good use. Yeah, Bob.
To answer that, I'm on the Soil and Water Board, and there's damage all over, and there's mm-hmm. projects all over, and mm-hmm. Can of Steel has a road that was totally wiped away. I mean, and they've requested help, and I mean, the road's not even there anymore. Mm-hmm. It was bad. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of damage. I mean, FEMA money may come in for that, and that's what we're hoping. But there's a lot of projects, like Robin said, homeowners, you know, they have to come up with 25%, but a lot of it could lose their homes from living along the Tuscarora Creek or whatever creek in the county. It keeps eating away at the bank, and if you don't put some rock to stabilize it, they could lose their home.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of that in the county.
Yeah. This project, though, isn't for repairing I can't remember what he told us all, but it's not for repairing things from the flood damage. It's a different request.
They had 18 projects on the books.
Yeah. Right.
These were projects that were already listed. But the money didn't funded. Come in.
Yeah. And they couldn't get funding.
Right. They were all pre-approved for the flood. I'm not talking about,
right.
Okay. I did talk a little bit about the present flood, but it's not that. We're waiting for FEMA on that.
Gotcha. Right, John?
Yeah. So a lot of these properties that were damaged weren't in the floodplain, so therefore couldn't get flood insurance. Is that going to change because of what has happened?
Undetermined. Yeah. We've had conversations about that too. Mr. Potter has asked a number of questions, and I've been speaking with Tim, and most of you know Janet Thigpen from STC, who is kind of the flood specialist, and they actually are working at, there's an active project for mapping and working with New York State, which would then be sent to FEMA to discuss these things.
See, like in the flood we had in Jasper Woodhall, come down the Tuscarora Creek, we have a town of Tuscarora pays to have a river gauge up there near the Borden Bridge. And that was over 14 foot. I mean, this was a creek you can walk across with your house slippers and not get wet most of the year. And we had 14 foot, and the highest it had ever been at 13 in 72. Mm-hmm. And so it was a foot higher than it broke the record.
Over the bridges, wow. Over the guardrails of the bridges.
Yeah, it was over the top. So, I mean, you had a wall of water 14 foot high.
Okay, so not to prolong, and we have a motion and a second on this soil and water proposal of $320,000. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carry. Now, Jack has
two informational.
Two more informational.
Sure. So the committee, in terms of the other ARPA request that would report to this committee, asked a question about the fund balance of the Steuben County Agricultural Society, and they've reported back that as of this moment, a few days ago, they have $143,000 fund balance. So that is for your information. And second, finally received word, I mentioned it to Robin and Scott, received word from VRBO back, and their response was, we are not able to undertake any other regulatory agreements at this time.
Oh, that's baloney. So they're so busy trying to process all the requests for housing that they can't take time to.
So my response back after talking to Jen was, okay, please be advised that there has been discussion about mandatory collection.
We can do that?
Posted.
Oh, is that how Skyler County did it?
That's how Yates County,
is that how they did it?
So, yeah. And they never responded back to that. And that was 3 weeks ago. So
it's not real. They already have counties that they're doing this for.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
Without a local law.
I know.
But they're saying they're too busy to add.
Yeah, because they're so busy processing all the requests for, you know, people wanting to use VRBO.
Yeah. So I think we should head down the path of putting together a local law.
I agree. Absolutely.
I mean, you can't have VRBO not, you know, customers not doing it and Airbnb doing
it. Yeah, it's not fair.
Some counties VRBO is doing it. That's how we hunted down how to contact them, as we found a county that had recently negotiated with them and begged them for the contact information.
And they're advertising all the time on television now.
And they own, I believe, HomeAway as well.
So yeah.
They represent significant portion of those two companies.
Right.
Definitely we should do that. How soon can we do that?
It would be finance committee that would do it, but we'd have to take a look. I mean, it would be, yeah.
It's been proposed before. I mean, I've been down this road where the discussion has been had and then it doesn't move off the floor, so to speak, with you all after the discussion. But I mean, we can get it on an agenda. Your request for finance would be where it would go.
Yes.
For discussion.
Well, I think it should absolutely go on there. I have a client who rents through VRBO, but when she comes in with her information, I calculate room tax and sales tax. So basically right now it's coming out of her pocket instead of having VRBO actually collect it, because that is in compliance with the law. So for them to say, I guess if they tell us that they can't take on any more regulatory contracts and then we just let it drop, then they win. Yeah. We can't have that. That's crazy.
The only thing on that point, though, it very likely would still fall on the homeowner to collect, not VRBO.
Mm-hmm. VRBO collects all the, they added on to, because we've used them, they've added it on to the price.
Yeah,
they
consumer,
do, but I don't
know. I thought they pay it.
The default would be that the homeowner would have to submit that.
I don't know that we could have a local law ready, but we could put it on finance for a discussion and I can look at it in the meantime, because I'd have to look at the Airbnb agreement as well to see if that factors in to what we did with them in this.
They volunteered to take that on for the homeowner.
Yeah.
So that's where, because the definition of the accommodation wouldn't be VRBO. The definition of the accommodation would be that individual's household.
So we'd have a discrepancy.
So unfortunately, that sort of, and it didn't work through, but just thinking off the top of my head, I mean, I don't know if we have the statutory authority to say any third party agency that markets must collect. I don't know if we can force that or not. That's something we're going to have to talk about.
We could take a look at Yates and go from there. Yeah. It'd be nice. Because the lakes, it would be great to have a consistent.
I believe Yates was the homeowners.
I think so too, from looking at it before, well, but we can double check.
But wouldn't this be like the room tax that we have with lodging? I mean,
that's what we're trying to do. That's exactly what it would be. But now it would be.
But with the lot, with the hotels, it's not voluntary for them to collect it. It's required.
Yes. Correct. But the hotel owns that property.
So it goes to the homeowner. So the homeowner
owns that property. VRBO just markets it.
Mm.
Now you would think that to make life easier, and so those people don't go, then go jump to Airbnb to list it. You would think that.
They would do the same.
They would eventually pick it up for them, but just be prepared.
Well, if they went to Airbnb, that's better off because we already have an agreement with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the rentals on the lake are just keep going up and up. You know, a couple of years ago, 3,000 a week. Now it's 4,000 a week. I got a friend, he said, I'm going to 6,000 a week.
Yeah,
I saw one last week. The rent was $9,000 a week.
Get out!
Oh my god, that's crazy.
$9,000. OMG, is there gold in that?
It's a big place, but I mean, well, $9,000 a week.
And so there's going to be those intricacies. And again, Yates has been through that before. Some counties, you know, in the Mohawk Valley, have also done that. So we wouldn't be the first one to do that, but. Just know that's a lot of it. When I recalled when Yates was going through that, that was a lot of the feedback. And then the other side of it is, and Yates did a good job. I've talked to them, well, back when Sarah Purdy was still there. So it's been a while, but you know, one of their main concerns was enforcement, because if you're collecting off an individual homeowner, you know, how do you do that? You know, how does finance ensure that happens? That's why in an ideal world, VRBO says yes. And then between them, HomeAway, Airbnb, you're picking up 90%+ of the market. But looks like that's not going to happen.
Yeah, Yates actually sent the sheriff out to support them, knocked on the door.
Seriously?
Yeah, they did. Oh, they really got into a battle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But
yeah,
whatever we get is more than what we're getting now.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, you could say that part of the revenue is going to pay for enforcement.
Yeah, you just might have to contract, add a staff and finance something if it came down to that.
And that's the problem. I guess that's where you have to get creative, because, I mean, the sheriff can go out, but it's a civil law. So, like, he can't arrest you for under the civil. So it gets dicey, like with the hotel tax. You know, we have a system in place when you don't pay that you get your nasty gram, and then you get hauled in under a civil subpoena for a hearing in front of Tammy and a hearing officer. And then it takes a long time. It's not long.
Can it be a lien on the property?
Trying to think how it works. I think you just with the civil realm, it gets difficult,
but
in time, when people aren't paying their hotel tax, it takes a lot of finance and my time to be debt collectors, essentially.
Yeah.
Carol?
Jack, do we have a number from the revenue from Airbnb this year or last year?
No, I'll get that from finance.
Wasn't it like 40,000?
It was 40+ for not even the full year. So the last time we looked at it, but I'll ask finance about that.
Thank you.
Is that the sales tax or is that
room tax?
Room tax. Kevin reported what he had gotten or had received from Tammy in July or August. I don't remember what it was. Do you remember at the last meeting? I don't remember.
That could be your enforcement agency.
They wouldn't mind, I don't think. Well, they might have to hire.
Well, they're going to have their hand out wanting the money.
Well, they're going to get the money. Yeah.
Okay.
Ingest.
Any other business to be brought before the committee? I'm not aware of anything. So, motion to adjourn.
Move it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? We're adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Oh, someone asked.
I'm going to give you a pad of post-it notes.